Well, it looks like we all made it back to the call today. Welcome to the call, everybody. Today is the 23rd of March, and the wind is blowing at my house yet again, and it's planting day, but I'm going to plant in the wind anyway. It seems like almost every year me and my children are outside planting in the wind, and I love the symbolism of planting in the wind. Because I feel like that's what we do as parents anyway, or just in general in this world, that there's this tumult going on around us, things are happening, people are having attitude problems, or there's crisis in the world, but we keep planting nonetheless. Even though it's not an ideal day, we recognize there may never be an ideal day that fits, and so I'm going to put these seeds in the ground anyway, even if a few of them happen to blow away and don't get used the way that I would like them to. I'm going to keep putting them in and keep getting more seeds. And that's what I feel like we're doing with these calls and with the implementation course, especially, is we're figuring out what kind of seeds we need to be putting in the ground first and second and third so that we can grow something that can weather the storms that happen to be raging all around us. So if you've got wind blowing at your house and if it's planting day, then when you go out, just think of that. That's what I'm going to be visualizing today as I'm out there in the wind yet again, another year with my children planting in a March wind. Anyway, I want to take just a few minutes, really just a few, and talk about burnout for moms. I've addressed this before, but I continually get questions on this issue, and I know it's something that we all face. And I just want to address it for a few minutes, give a few tips, and I'm not going to be really wordy because we have two people that we're going to mentor on today's call, but I just wanted to throw this in case it was helpful to anyone. So, let's just be clear about something. There really is not enough time. There isn't. And that is probably our biggest struggle in life, is that we have all of these things in our minds that we want to do. All of these ideal plans that we have for our family and for our life and for the missions that we're leading and everything else. And there just never seems to be enough time. Well, it's just going to get worse, to be quite honest. Even though there's always been 24 hours in a day, the more technologically advanced we get, the more organized that we get on many levels, on religious levels, community levels, family levels, and, you know, government levels, what have you, the more organized that we get, or the more means for organization that we have on the computer and stuff, the more busy we will get, the more things we will take on, because we will be able to take them on, and the more time will be sucked away. There is a man, his name is William Jordan, and he wrote many books, but what? Excuse me, my voice all of a sudden is cutting out. These early morning calls, my voice doesn't know what to do it with itself. Anyway, but William Jordan wrote a wonderful book called The Power of Truth. And in The Power of Truth, he says, everyone always says there's not enough time. Now, I want you to know that this book was written a long time ago, well over 100 years ago. I can't remember the print date at this particular time. But he says, everyone always complains about not having enough time. And I thought, see, people have been complaining about this forever. And so maybe we should all just stop. But he says, what they don't understand is that time is all we've got. Time is God's greatest gift to us. Each day is a day with more time. The key is to figure out how to spend your time. So I just wanted to throw that out there at the beginning, and then I'm going to talk about that just a little bit. So the first tip, I'm going to give 11 tips today for mommy burnout, how to stop it, how to turn yourself into more than one mommy, however you want to think of it, but how to be that mommy that's going to bring you peace and happiness and joy. And I could probably touch on all of these at great length, but I am going to be very quick. And if anybody wants me to touch on them further another day, I'm happy to do that. So number one, and this has to do with the time thing, is what I call the investment. And what that means is that no matter what moment you are in, maybe you are driving someone to a soccer practice, or maybe you are cooking dinner, or you're talking with a friend, or whatever it happens to be, that you be in that moment right then. Don't think about the clock ticking away. Don't think about all the lists of things to do. Maintain eye contact with the people around you. Discuss meaningful things. And make that moment count. However long or short it happens to be, make that moment count. Those car rides can be beautiful moments. They can be times where moms and dads actually connect with their children, hear things that are going on that they didn't know about before, make goals for a certain problem that happened, you know, that's happening, or, you know, to fix school grades, or to help with a friend relationship, or just to express to them their admiration for what they're doing at the stage of life that they are at. Don't waste the car rides. Don't listen to the radio. Invest. And I'm not saying ever listen to the radio. That would probably be difficult, especially, you know, if you're in the car alone. But I'm even when I'm in the car alone, I don't listen to the radio that often, because I believe in investing in that time with myself. So I actively think instead. I keep a little piece of paper next to me or a recording device, and I think through things and I say stuff out loud, or I write a note on the seat next to me on that piece of paper, so that I am always making use of the time. And sometimes relaxing is making use of that time too. That does have to happen a little bit from time to time. But as you invest in every person around you and in every moment that you are in, you will find that the relationships you are building are strengthened. The memories that you are making are more enhanced. The very moments will seem to expand. And each day, instead of feeling like you got cheated out of time at the end of the day, you will feel like, wow, look at all of the things I did today. Look at all of the moments I had. So if you remember nothing else from what I'm about to say on these 11 things, remember that one, number one, okay? Invest in every single moment. All of that takes is a quick mindset that, wait, my daughter's telling me about something she made with her Legos. I should listen. I should comment. I should make an investment right now. Even though I'm cooking eggs for the family for breakfast, doesn't matter. Invest in that relationship first. Okay, number two tip for mommy burnout is retreats. I got introduced to the idea of retreats from some good friends of ours, and they go like almost every month on a retreat together, the husband and the wife. And they'll go for just an overnight somewhere, and they discuss stuff, and they handle things at home. They're very productive retreats. They're not just like go and sit back, although there is a little bit of that, but they're very productive. And my husband and I have adopted doing retreats, And I'll tell you what, and we don't necessarily do them every month, but we do retreats. And I'll tell you what, these retreats are incredibly therapeutic. You know, all those things that are on your list forever, you can go on a retreat and get so many of them done. You can sit down and be like, hey, honey, for the first hour of the retreat, let's do the taxes. Okay, for the next hour of the retreat, let's plan our family vacations for the summer. Okay, for the next hour of the retreat, let's talk about what kind of a charity we want to give some money to this year, or what we want to do to teach our children philanthropy. Okay, now let's talk about how we're parenting the children. Now, then you have to go swimming because the dad's going to be ready for that. But anyway, have a retreat and have them fairly regularly if you can do it. Sometimes you don't even have to sleep away. Like my husband and I have, kid you not, gone to Whole Foods for a whole day on a Friday, and then we come home and go to bed. And then we go sit in the Whole Foods table lounge and stuff for a whole day on a Saturday. Then we come home in the evening and eat dinner and watch a movie with the kids and spend time with them. And so, and that can be a retreat because you took time away to get things done. And you do that every once in a while and your life feels so much better. The other thing I used to do just to like get away is when I had little teeny children. So if you have little children, this will apply to you. Once you get older children, it almost doesn't work out as good. At least that's what I've noticed for myself anyway. But when I had little children, one day a month, I would schedule time with my sister, my sister-in-laws, my mother, and we would all go scrapbooking, and we would sit for a whole day at a store, a scrapbook store. And we would go there as soon as they open. We'd go out to lunch, we'd come back and scrapbook again, and then we'd come home about dinner time. And we called those our Mother's Days. And when I would come home for Mother's Days, I was so excited to see my family and my children, and I felt so refreshed and renewed because we'd been talking and scrapbooking and doing something else on my list that was probably so bottom of the list it wouldn't normally ever get done, but that I really wanted to do. And so it felt so good to have those moments to do that. So anyway, that's number two, have retreats. Number three, read. I know the last thing you think that you have time for is reading, but it has to be a top priority somewhere. A person who reads is constantly refocused and refreshed. They have new insights to share with other people, and they become way more inspiring no matter how busy they are. Really, reading is an amazing thing. And if you're not much of a sit-down-and-read-a-book person, get books on tape. Listen to them as you jog. Listen to them when you go for a walk. Listen to them when you're weeding the garden. Well, actually, no, don't listen to them out there. That's a great place to think. Listen to them other places, in your car or wherever it happens to be. But constantly be refreshing and inspiring yourself with good things. You know, a great thing for you to be using just to begin with is use all of this stuff in the implementation course. There are so many audio things that you can listen to. You can download all of these calls, plus all the classes associated with each step. There are so many things that you can download and use to keep yourself refreshed. And then, you know, and just make it a habit. And then you'll start moving on to other things that you need to listen to as well. Number four, live in the right quadrants. I don't know if you have read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, but in that book he talks about the quadrants where people live. And he talks about how a lot of people live in these crisis quadrants as opposed to the quadrants where it's like the priorities, I need to do these things. And need to is like the reading. So this one kind of piggybacks on the reading. We've got to get ourselves out of thinking every single day is a crisis. We really must. Because if we stay in crisis and burden mode, you know, in those two kind of a quadrants where we're just carrying loads of stuff and putting out fires, then soon we do get burned out. And we have to stay in those quadrants where we're getting inspired and where we're doing things that are meaningful and important and that we've gotten rid of the rest. I recently hired someone to answer lots of my email. That doesn't mean I won't ever see your emails, by just so you know. But it does mean that, this person will filter through a whole bunch of emails and just send me the ones that directly apply to me. And she does other things too. And I'll tell you what, just the peace of mind knowing that somebody is looking at those emails is like, huh, now email's not a crisis anymore. Well, at least I hope it's not going to be a crisis. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, okay, number five. This is a health one. Eat light and healthy for energy and optimum performance. Stay away from the junk stuff. The more junk that you put in your body, the more pop, the more sugar, the more stuff like that, the less energy you have. I don't know if you've noticed that about yourself, but it's certainly true with me and a number of my friends. We've discussed this at length. In fact, we even had a discussion group on health and food one time because I have a monthly discussion group at my house. And almost everyone conclusively said, you know what, I'm so much happier. I have so much more energy. I feel so much more content when I eat light and healthy, when I eat things that don't feel like a brick just hit my stomach. So does what we eat have to do with whether we're going to burn out? Yeah, it does. And that's why I bring it up there. I'm no nutritionist. I just know what I know about myself. But I do know that that's something that matters for me. Next, another body one, exercise. And I wrote exercise your body and your mouth. And what I mean by that is, you know, find an enjoyable way to exercise. When I do some exercise at least once a week, I go walking with a friend, and we just talk about all kinds of things, things that she understands that maybe nobody else really does because she's a really good friend. And so find somebody to exercise your mouth with too. Make sure that you've got a good friend, or obviously your spouse would be the ideal thing, and pray often, right, because that's more exercise for the mouth and for the soul. Okay, next, talk to your husband a lot. Have a time where you report each day. Now, I know a lot of husbands don't like to be talked to too much, so you've got to, you know, make sure you've got the happy medium there. Some people's personalities aren't conducive with a whole bunch of talk, and they may feel like it's a burden. But try to give a report to your husband in a positive way, good reports. If you plan on reporting to your husband and telling him all the great things that happened every day, he's going to want those reports more. So make sure you brag to him, share those moments, and write in the journal too, because that's always good. Okay, number seven, this one's a no-brainer for us on this call, and I'm not going to discuss it a lot, but communicate effectively. Do you know, the emotions, the stress, the anxiety goes away if when you're in those moments with your family members and your friends that you're communicating effectively, and you know how to do that, or at least you're working on learning how to do that with the course, saying, you know, just now this is what happened and that kind of thing. Just yesterday I was at the park with a friend of mine who, you know, does teaching self-government in her family as well, and her little boy was having a hard time, and she was like, I saw her take a little breath, and then she said, just now, you know, and she started describing, and I was like, oh, you are so awesome. She's so great that she's able to just, you know, move on with just now. Number eight, you know I love this. Maybe you don't, but I find it very therapeutic, and that is dig in the dirt. Even though you don't have time to plant a garden, make one anyway, even if it's a small one, some little area that you can nurture and get used to making an environment for thriving for those plants that you're going to put there. As you do that, the principles from digging in the dirt and from making something thrive will inspire you. Even if your stuff all dies, it will still let you know, wait, why did it die? What did I do? It is an inspiring thing. Also, there is something chemical that happens to the body when you dig in the dirt. Okay, we're already to number 10. Number 10 is things can always wait until tomorrow. Don't forget that. I used to be really overwhelmed with a lot of my list of stuff, and I still make lists. Don't get me wrong. I think we're going to do that forever. But now when I make a list, I go, okay, I've got it all out. That's everything that has to happen. Now I do whatever the top priority is, the very best I can. And then after that, I'll go back to the list. I had a friend of mine, but that doesn't mean it's all going to happen in the next day or in the day you wrote it, right? Because if you think of it that way, you're just setting yourself up for disappointment and failure. I have a friend of mine. She's a wonderful woman. She's in her 80s now. And she said to me one day during canning season, because I like to can food and stuff, I really believe in living providently and teaching my family about how to do that too, especially in these days that we live in. Plus, it's just fun. Anyway, so I remember I was, you know, I came to water aerobics. She was in my water aerobics class that I taught. I came to water aerobics on like 3 hours sleep. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't sleep that much. I was up trying to finish those peaches or those beans or whatever it was that I was canning. And she looked at me and she said, Nicolene, don't you know that anything can wait till tomorrow? And I said, yeah, but I just wanted to get it done. Plus, actually, I have all these other things that I have to do today. And she said, well, if you have other things to do tomorrow, then you know what you do? You get rid of the other things and you finish what you're already involved in. She said, Nicolene, anything can wait till tomorrow. Go to bed. Even if you left them all sitting in water, blanched, they're fine. It's going to be okay. Just go to bed. And I looked at this 80-year-old woman and I thought, okay, she's wise. She knows stuff. By now, she knows it doesn't matter how important you think it is. Go to bed. I love her. She's awesome. Okay, the very last one, and this one you're going to scratch your head and go, the very last one is do something new. Start something new. When you start feeling like you are burning out, you have no time, that you can't hardly do anything else, then what you need to do is you need to take on a new project. I know it makes no sense whatsoever, but I promise you, it works. Taking on a new project revitalizes your purpose and helps you be able to look at the world in a more I can do perspective. Sometimes that fresh project pushes out some of the old ones that don't matter. And then just by nature of getting rid of some of that old garbage that's been hanging over your head, you feel better. There are many reasons why starting a new project helps people. And I do it all the time. Just when I think I'm completely maxed out, I do something else. And then I go, Nicolene, either you're the craziest person or you're really good at starting new projects. I don't know what it is. And the thing is I'm not a starter and not finish. I am a finisher. I like to finish projects too. That doesn't mean that every single project gets finished. There's a few that have not gotten finished. But for the most part, I do always finish things. But I also know that as soon as I'm overwhelmed, I need to force myself to readjust. And that's the best way to do that is to take on something new, something important that's new. Okay, well, I hope those helped you. I just wanted to give them to you. I promised them a number of weeks ago, and I realized, oh, I never did that. And so if people were waiting for that, I probably should go ahead and just give my tips for avoiding mommy burnout or, honestly, daddy burnout. I mean, these tips apply to anybody. I just applied them to mothers on this call. So we're going to go ahead and have a coaching session with Jennifer, and then we'll have a coaching session with Anne-Marie. And everybody's welcome to stay on the call. And then after, if you have any questions that apply to any of the things that we've talked about today, any of the coaching sessions, or if you have any suggestions or anything you want to discuss, then we would be totally happy to do that. Okay, so Jennifer, are you there? Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. So let's hear kind of what's going on, what you immediately want help with at this particular time.
Routine. We've either have ADHD or acquired ADHD from my erratic schedules. And the after-school schedule sure doesn't kill us. And we stopped all of the extracurricular sports and everything like that so we could get things settled down and in order. Mm-hmm. We also have a problem with positive consequences. It sounds like the boys are always getting just now, and then they all start screaming because they know they're going to get a job. And mm-hmm. so there's a lack of positive consequences. And also, I'd like to hear you say a little bit about how to teach the kids motivation. Probably has something to do with positive consequences.
Right. You know? Well, definitely. Definitely being more positive and optimistic is going to help with motivation. That's for sure. but also just recognizing, okay, what is it that motivates this child? What is it that motivates this child? Okay, I'm going to have a meeting with this child, and I'm going to talk to them about a special motivational system that applies just to them. So maybe you have a child who's motivated by snacks or something like that. Then you would say, you know, we've had an issue lately with this one thing, and I notice you're not happy. And I notice that you've chosen to have a hard time with, you know, whatever this, that, and the other, and that you've chosen oftentimes to have lots of negative consequences. I would love to see you more happy. I would love to see you choosing to follow instructions and whatever the problem happens to be. And then you say, so how about for this next week that when you follow instructions, you know, like, get, I don't know, a snack out of the snack bag, or maybe the person, like, if you've followed instructions for, you know, four times in a row, maybe you get to have 15 minutes of computer time, whatever motivates them, you know. We used to have a little system where people would get, I know your kids are a bit older, and so you'd have to adjust this accordingly if it were something you even wanted to do, but we had little calendars, and on the calendars, they automatically got a certain amount of money per day because I believe in not making children work to earn money, because then they think that their home life is a job. So we just automatically said, okay, every day is worth this much money. You just have this much money. But if you don't follow instructions, and I think it was like 50 cents, and if you don't follow instructions, then there's an X that goes on the chart on that day, and then that would mean that you lost 10. For every X, it was 10 cents. And then at the end of the week, they would total it up, and Dad would, you know, pay whatever. We did that for a while. I want to think it was a good year that we did that, and Quinn and Paige were young when we did that, but see, that was 50 cents. Like, you have older kids, that might not matter, but there are systems like that that you could come up with that would maybe matter to them or to the little ones at the very least. I think just knowing what motivates them, you know, is it, and what their love language is, you know, are they touchers? Are they words? Do they need to hear more good things from you? Can praise solve it? Because it might be able to, or is it something where, you know, they need a certain amount of quality time with you and with the family? You know, what is it that they need? And filling those needs can help a lot, too. I would say that, you know, just before we leave the idea of motivation, one thing that everyone needs to learn at some point, all children need to learn, is that their behaviors are theirs. They own them. They belong to them, which means that they earn extra chores. You don't give extra chores. And that is an important mindset to understand self-government. Because if you get in the habit, and I know it's super easy to fall into this habit, if you get in the habit of saying, you know, okay, well, I'm going to give you this chore, or I'm giving you this chore or this chore, or you get a chore, as if it were some gift. The kids are like, oh, great, they're giving me this, they're doing this for me. And the focus switches from inside themselves to on the parents. That's important. That focus needs to be changed to on them. So that's why having a little planning meeting and saying, okay, I've noticed that you seem to do this a lot, just like this other day, this is what happened, and you're not happy when that happens, and you usually choose to earn consequences because you take it too far and you don't accept, a no answer, or you don't follow instructions or whatever it is. And then, so it's all about them. You don't do this and you didn't do this, and so you chose to earn this. And just changing the phrasing of some of that can help them understand that it's up to them to make a change. It is really important, though, that when children do good, that it is acknowledged. I witnessed recently a parent with a child. The child was having a fit and not really getting acknowledged that much. So then the parent was kind of getting after them, but then kind of ignoring them. And then the child decided to change his focus, and he all of a sudden was like, okay, well, I did that. And then the parent didn't acknowledge the child again because the parent was busy, talking to me or whatever. And so I just kind of said, oh, wow, that should be praised. Because I felt like the parent was missing a golden opportunity because the child was trying to do something positive. And it's really important that we recognize when that happens. Even if our children make bad mistake after bad mistake, they don't do them all day long every day. They do try to do good things here and there too, just by nature, because they're not wicked. They make bad choices. They may get emotional, but they also make a lot of good choices, and we do have to make sure that we praise that. Okay, so I answered that portion of the question. Is that clear, or is there other details I need to know about that? And then let's talk about what else you were wanting me to answer.
No, that was awesome. I got some great notes for Sunday's mentor meeting. Thank you.
Good.
The other thing is about the routine. We're easily distracted and fall out of routines, or even get burned out with routines, which you've already addressed. But when you talk about routine, how strict is the routine? I mean, what is it really?
Right. Okay. So like the come home from school routine, or the get ready to leave for school routine, that kind of a thing. How strict should a routine be? Well, that depends somewhat on, your family and how disciplined you are. You must know my family has, we have a pretty detailed routine for how things need to happen. But I do want you to know, it doesn't happen every single day the exact way that it is supposed to happen. And that is because me and my husband, and consequently the majority of my children, are live-in-the-moment people. We're the kind of people where we go, wait a minute, what is the most important right now? Is it the most important right now to get the dishes done, or is it the most important right now for us all to call grandma and sing happy birthday to her because we're thinking of it right now? And in our family's opinion, it would be most important to call grandma and sing happy birthday because it's grandma's birthday and we might forget it later. And so we would then stop what we're doing and do that. So, the long and the short is you have to make sure that the routine is not a crisis. If the routine is a crisis, if it's not something that replenishes the family in any way, then it needs to be adjusted. Now, that doesn't mean the kids are going to like it either way that you do it, especially because if you think of it, their time is so, they kind of get shuttled around from thing to thing. And so what happens is they get kind of burned out by a certain point in the day. Come lunchtime, they're like, okay, I'm done, And probably at school, they're not as motivated after lunch. And probably, you know, at home, it's going to be the same thing. It's like, okay, I'm really tired of all the have-to-dos. Because they've been living in have-to and crisis all day. Crisis was, oh, no, I forgot to study for my math test. And have-to was go here, go here, go here, don't forget the book, turn this thing in, blah, blah. And they're doing that all day long. And they hit a point where they stop being motivated because they haven't had enough time in the other quadrants that I talked about earlier in the call. So they essentially are getting burnout is what happens. And sometimes the routine or the schedule that happens after school can add to burnout as opposed to you know, fixing home problems. Because you're coming at it from a different angle. You've been home hopefully checking some things off your list. That never enough, but you've been doing some things, and then you know, and then you're ready to be really productive with the kids when they get home because you've got it all planned out in your mind for how it's going to go. And for them, their defenses are already up. And so that's a hard battle for any parent to take on. But I know that some of it is like one of those necessities. So I'm not speaking out against routines. I've got to be very clear on that. I'm not saying don't have one. I am saying you need to be very careful about planning out what your routine is going to be and acknowledging the needs of your children. So, I don't know how your routine goes, but if it were me in my family, just knowing the needs of my children, which maybe could be similar to the needs of your children because we live in the moment a little bit more, what I would probably have my afternoon routine look like if my children went to school, in fact, when I did have foster children, when they went to school, is they would come home, they would have a snack, we'd kind of hang out and talk and that kind of stuff for a little bit. And I would just sort of offer up this little window, you know, maybe it's a half an hour or whatever, where it's just kind of like relax and kick back. But then they know that at 3:30 or whatever time you think is the best time for your family, that you're going to take a look at so-and-so stuff, or at 3:30 is homework time, and we're going to try to have all of that homework done, you know, in 45 minutes or in an hour, unless you're big enough that you've got a lot that you've got to work on for hours and hours. But you, those children are yours. That home environment is yours. And you have to make sure that you don't turn it all over to the school, because the school has them the whole day long. So the most important thing you can do when they are home, and I cannot emphasize this enough, the very most important thing that you can do is make sure that the environment when they are home is all about your family. It's not about school anymore. It's not about performance or grades or anything else like that. It's about your family. If you can fix that part of what's happening in the after-school hours and in the evening hours, then the family can heal the way that it needs to, which means that you might need to make a few adjustments, you know, and they might need to have a little bit of time as a family to do something, you know, after school, understanding that there is going to be a time where, you know, it will be homework time. But even then, you know, you're incredibly helpful. It's not like, you know, I don't know, why didn't you ask your teacher, blah, blah, blah. Why do you always never ask questions? Why do you, you know, whatever you say to your kids, but that you're not like that, that you go, well, let's figure this out. You know what? So-and-so that goes to church with us happens to be a math teacher or is really good at math. Let's call them and see if they can help us do this. And you help find them a mentor, but everything is a can-do attitude. Everything is a bonding time that you maximize each one of those moments that you're in so that your child understands their time with you means something, and your desire for their success goes beyond just expecting it, but that you're going to help facilitate it and find them the right people to help them be successful. If you do chores after school, I know a lot of people do chores after school, and if that's the case with your family, then you're going to want to make sure that you put those into the right time slot. You might want to do chores right before dinner as opposed to right when they get home, just because right before dinner almost makes the most sense. So it's like, because even if you did them right when they get home, then they're going to do stuff, then they're going to lounge about, then the chores will need to be done again because everybody's stuff is all over. But then right before dinner time, usually everyone's tidying up either right before or right after dinner. But there's like a motivation, like, okay, you guys, dinner is in 20 minutes. Let's take 20 minutes and let's all do our chores. And you work with them if you can. It depends what dinner is, right? But that's still considered work if you're working on dinner. But you say, okay, I'm going to keep cooking the food. Or whoever's cook day is, maybe they're going to keep cooking the food with you or doing it themselves. And then you're going to say, we are all going to work for the next half hour or the next 20 minutes. 20 minutes is pretty good because it seems like it's almost just 15. But then it's not, because it's not quite 30. But then it's close enough to 30 that you're still getting a decent amount of work time in. So if your schedules are really cramped, then 20 minutes is a great way to start. And then you say, okay, in 20 minutes, we're going to do our stewardships or we're going to do whatever chores we have to do, and we're going to have them all done by this time, and then we will have dinner. And they all want dinner, and not that you would hold that over them necessarily, especially if a person worked really hard, their stewardship or their particular chore took them extra long because they were really going the extra mile or because it was in really bad shape. Then you're going to stop and just say, hey, you know what, it's dinner time. Come take a break. Let's have dinner. You've worked really hard. You can either come back to it tomorrow, or you can say, you know what, after dinner, I'm going to come out here and help you finish this, you know, whatever it happens to be. But always showing mercy to them while at the same time acknowledging the fact that they made the choices that led to success. And so it's not about them doing something for you. It's about the whole family serving the family all at the same time. And that's the way I would handle chores, especially if chores happen after school hours. So in our family, my kids are really good about just doing chores. But that's because we've had a history of doing it for a really long time, and because I've done just what I described to you for a long time. I did chores with them. We would have family work time and all work together. And so they'll just go and do chores and you know, make dinners and do things like that. But I've got to say that still every once in a while, even when they're that good at doing chores, still every once in a while, I make sure that I get in there and I am working right with them side by side. And you know what? When mom's working with them side by side, talking about stuff, having a good time, dancing around the kitchen with a broom, you know, all those great things, they love working. It's an amazing thing. They love having fun. You know, when they're at school all day, they see one person sit behind a desk and say, do this, and then everybody else has to do that. And that format of leadership gets really old. I love the format of leadership where the leader is doing it too. The leader is right with you. You can call it the Gandhi format of leadership, you know, the leader that works with all the rest of the people too. And definitely that type of leadership is well suited for a home. So does that help with routine? Like, did you want me to tell you do this, this, this for your routine? Or does giving you some guidelines like that help you be able to figure out where you might need to make adjustments?
That gave me an idea of where I need to make the adjustments. It really, I actually had a great, huge paradigm shift, really, with do my things during the day so that I'll be prepared and ready for them when they come home, to help them be productive.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm glad that, you know, I just said that one. I didn't even, that, but I'm glad, isn't that how it goes, right? That was the big epiphany, but I'm glad that you got that because, honestly, there is a lot to be said for the mom who takes 10 minutes to make a plan. There really is, and, you know, you all know I homeschool my children. Well, that's no easy task, and for years and years at night, before I would go to bed, I would literally take 10 minutes or maybe 15, and I would write down a schedule of what I wanted to do for each child the next day. And I would just get my brain in that mode so that it would make me wake up, so that it would make me be productive, so that it would make me be prepared and have the right crafts on hand, you know, or whatever it was. And when I took that 10 minutes, it would magnify my time with my children tenfold through the whole day. So yeah, you're right. Doing that can make a huge difference in your time with the children and with the family. So
thank
good.
You.
Thanks for sharing that. Is there anything else that you need, or should we move on to somebody else?
This is a funny one. I'm going to ask it because I've emailed it and it hasn't been answered, but it seems kind of silly. I'm embarrassed. My kids talk nonstop about whatever it is they want to talk about. While someone else is talking, they talk over the person.
Oh.
And it's like all four and five of them can be all talking at the same time and no one's listening to each other.
Uh-huh.
This happens.
And this is like around the dinner table or whatever.
Everywhere. In a car, at school, the teacher's talking, the kid's talking. Is that just something a little bit beyond self-government? But it's a self-control thing, so I was wondering what I could apply directly.
No, that's a really good question, actually. I like that question, and I'll tell you why. Because that is a question that that applies to a lot of people nowadays, not just children. But I see adults do that all the time. And I'm going to sneeze, so if it comes out any second, sorry about that. But I see this happen, too, when I'm at church or other places. I see people just talk and talk and talk. There was an event that I was at where a person was performing a musical number, and everyone was quiet and listening to the musical number. Before the musical number started, someone was talking to me, and they just kept talking, even though the musical number was going on. And it was like almost full voice, you know? And I'm sitting there going, I want to look at the musical number. I don't want to look at you. But then there's this social propriety that's like, I don't want to be rude to you, but we're being rude to this person over here who's doing a musical number. And so it was a really difficult situation to be in because I felt like, who needs my focus more right now? Social propriety would say, look at a musical number and tell the other person, can you wait, you know? But then the other person, if they don't have enough respect to even be quiet for that musical number, then when you tell them that, are they going to then respect you? Or are they going to disrespect you? Anyway, so it was kind of an awkward situation. And it is a respect issue, just so you know. Well, okay, it could be two things. It could be kind of an ADD-ish kind of an issue where there's just so many thoughts in the head that they're wanting to download the thoughts, and that if they don't download the thoughts, they feel anxious. And some of that has to do with age, like immaturity, and some of it has to do with just, you know, just having an abundance of thoughts in your head. There's some people that have thoughts that feel like they're private and they won't share them. There's other people that, if they have a thought, they feel like everyone else needs to know, no matter who they are. Like, let's call the president and let him know I had a thought, you know. And I was probably more of a child like that, actually. And I had to consciously teach myself to not be that way. And that's a hard thing to teach yourself. And it is a self-government matter, actually. So it's a good thing that you brought that question up. And a lot of it has to do with insecurity, like I said, and the age of the children, because they hit a certain age. And this is especially prevalent in girls, although it can be boys too, of course. But they feel like if someone isn't talking, that somehow the social experience is not as good. And I don't know if that's just because that's how it is at school. There's always this hum of noise and someone's always talking, and they, no one spends much time listening, so that it just seems like that's when the experience is good. Okay, so, but it also is a respect issue. That said, it still is a respect issue. Before we talk about this, I do have to also say, you have to be careful as a parent that you are, you know, make sure that you're not expecting children to kind of do that only talk when spoken to thing. And, you know, I know you, and I know you're probably not like that, but just in case, I want to make sure I throw that out there for anybody that, you know, that kind of a paradigm is damaging oftentimes to relationships, and you don't usually get to know your children very deeply if you're not wanting them to talk that much. It is a gift to a parent to have a child who will talk, who is a talker. And just ask any parent who has a child that won't talk, and they'll say, wow, you're lucky, even if they're not saying the right stuff, or even if it's at the wrong time, you're lucky. So anyway, there is that factor in there too. So make sure that you're not just wanting every car ride to be quiet, or wanting every meal to be, you know, like you see on the movies with nobody talking or whatever. When you have a family of a bunch of boys like you've got, there's going to be some noise pretty much all the time, I would think, with them around. Anyway, so how do you help them see that there's a certain kind of respect? I think that's probably the heart of the question is, you know, how do you teach children to know that there is a time and a place for everything? My father used to just simply say that. He used to say, Nicolene, there is a time and a place for everything. This is neither the time nor the place for you to be talking. You need to be quiet. And he would just educate me to, you've got to pay attention to your surroundings, to your circumstances. And he would also let me know, you know, do you know that people get bothered, even if they like you and they want your attention, they get bothered if you put them in a strange social situation, such as, you know, talking over a bunch of other people or something like that. And let them know how people actually perceive it, because that's something many people don't recognize. The other thing that ultimately they're going to have to understand, and I'm wondering if possibly, you know, maybe your husband would be good at explaining this, or you would be, if it's a skill that you've already mastered yourself, is that you could say to them, you know, I've noticed that in our family, we have an issue with not listening to what other people have to say, but with talking over those people. And actually, it's a type of a power struggle that shows disrespect, and it ruins relationships. Even if it's just you and your brother, it kind of damages relationships, and we need to stop doing that. Sometimes it becomes a habit. Sometimes you're not trying to be mean. You just have a habit of saying stuff that come into your head and not waiting until it would be your turn. And so then you know, say, okay, so this is what you do. This is what I do to stop myself from doing that, because I understand that craving of wanting to say something. And whatever it is that you do, do you have a notebook and write down your ideas, something you want to tell someone so you don't forget? Do you just weigh the situation? Well, there's this going on, and that seems to have a higher priority than this thing that I was going to say. So if it doesn't get said, that's okay. That is a hard thing to do. Like, have you ever begun to say something, somebody cuts you off, nobody acknowledges what you said, and then you feel like, I want to say that again because I want to discuss it. But then they've moved far beyond what you've talked about, and you either choose to bring it up again, or you just choose to go, well, that's okay. It obviously wasn't meant to be part of the conversation. And part of that comes from thinking more of the person that you're talking to than thinking of yourself. And that's a very mature skill. And it's going to take a bit for your children to learn that. But I would think either having their father, who's another guy, talk about it and saying, listen, I want you guys to be successful socially with friends, with business, you know, work people that you're working with, stuff like that. I've got to teach you something. And maybe even have a motivational system for it where you say, okay, whenever people are talking over somebody else, then, you know, maybe there's this negative consequence. Whenever people choose to wait their turn to communicate, and they even check back for it because this is an instruction, an understood instruction, because we're discussing it in this family meeting, that maybe there would be some positive consequence, or maybe you put a bean in a jar, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, to try and master it, to recognize that what you have in your mind to say is just as valuable as what somebody else has to say, and sometimes you might have to wait. The other thing that I wonder about is I wonder if your children couldn't benefit pretty greatly from having the opportunity to wait in more lines, to practice more patience. We live in a pretty quick world, a pretty self-serve world. Everything is about self, self, self. That doesn't. I don't want to be inconvenienced. I wonder if there are some things that you could do as a family, maybe take up hiking where it takes a lot of patience to get somewhere, or maybe, you know, just giving your kids the opportunity to go somewhere where they have to wait in a line in order to get something they really want, whatever it happens to be. You know, even at Disneyland, you can fast pass everything so nobody ever has to wait in a line anymore. It's great, but then you don't actually learn the skill of how to wait in a line, how to wait for other people, how to value them and their time that they've spent in the line just as much as you value your own. It's a great skill for people to learn, so you might want to look for opportunities to teach that. I would discuss it in a family meeting. That's the long story short. I would bring it up and I would talk about it with your husband in a couple's meeting, make a plan for what you think might be the best way to take care of it. I would discuss it in a family meeting and let the boys know that it's an understood instruction, and then have positive and negative consequences for it. Let them help you decide what those might be and explain to them how great it's going to help them, you know, in their family relationships, but in their friend relationships as well, and stuff like that, and then see how you do. That's what I would suggest.
Thank you.
Anyway, that's a great, great question, by the way. I don't think anybody's ever asked that one before, so that was kind of fun. And if you've ever conquered that in your with yourself, like I have tried to do, you know that is no easy task to hold back, to bury the anxiety and be like, it's okay, I didn't get hurt, it's okay. I didn't have to say something right then. I can choose to value what this other person's saying instead. That's a hard skill. It's very mature, and hopefully everybody gets to that point. But there are many adults that don't even, as I explained in that one situation. Okay, Anne-Marie, let's go ahead and talk about what's going on in your family and what I can help you with.
Hey, Nicole. Sorry.
No worries.
I had a question. Sorry. I had a question mostly about my older one. So this is all pretty new to me. I've been doing leadership for about a year only, and this really for the last 2 months, listening to tapes and getting into the implementation course. And I must say that the one thing that has made the most difference is actually the calmness and the change in relationship. That has been remarkable for me.
Right.
But we're now just starting in doing a family economy. And I have a 16 and a 14-year-old. And those are my main concerns, also younger ones. But
so 16 and 14, okay.
16 and 14, 16-year-old boy, 14-year-old girl.
Okay.
And part of the question I have with that is that we've always had a certain standard, but I think for the last couple of years, especially in terms of electronics and some clothing, we've let that slide a tiny little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not a tiny little bit. And now we're putting up this new standard, and they're rebelling against it. They're saying, this is my choice, and you shouldn't decide that. And yes, I can say you're choosing a consequence, but like they said, no, because you're choosing the standard for for. I'm like, yeah, that's probably true. So I need some advice on that, I guess.
Okay. Well, let's discuss that their argument first, okay? Let's discuss the argument. The argument is that it's your standard, and that you know they're not choosing to debunk it because it's your standard. Well, no, actually, they're still choosing to debunk it because they're in a home. It starts with love and respect. And what they're saying to you by choosing to have a difficult time with the standard and trying to be controversial about it is, I only love and respect you when it's convenient for me and I get something from you. It's a very selfish relationship. And so otherwise, I'm not going to show love and respect to you, and I'm going to make a big deal out of this, and I'm going to call it your fault, and I'm going to try to manipulate you, and that kind of thing. And I'm just inferring here. I'm guessing that's what's going on. Obviously, correct me if I'm wrong. But
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right in that. That is going on. Yeah.
Okay. So the thing is that, standards are something that are at the core of everything. And for your younger children, it's probably not going to be as big of an issue, especially if the older ones end up keeping the standards. The younger ones will be like, okay, that's just how it goes, and that's the standards of our family, and they'll just recognize it as a given, and they're not going to have probably as hard of a time. But the older ones, because they're already at a certain point where then all of a sudden it's like, wait, I've got to reform myself, they're taking it personally. And that's, they kind of have to when it comes to standards. Standards are something we all take personally, to be quite honest. They are the things that we hold most dear to us. And if your children are having a hard time with your standards, then that means that their standards with their friends or whoever are actually part of their personal code, and that they are, because the friend code seems so important because they're with them quite frequently and they constantly measure themselves up against them and things like that, that it seems like those should be the people in the outside world should be the people that they care about, gelling with standard-wise. Also, there's a whole bunch of rhetoric in the world outside of our homes that preaches a whole bunch of different standards. And your standards that you're making are probably, just guessing here, contrary to a lot of the stuff that is out there in the world and that people are saying, to do. And so that makes you be in the underdog role a little bit, and children don't like to be in the underdog role. They like to be in the I'm on top, I'm with everybody else role, and that's just something that, by the nature of our social structure, that they have learned. You want to be with the popular kids. You want to have a certain number of friends. You want to have – there's sort of a social status that equates to happiness and success, and if anything could possibly infringe upon that, they get a little bit worried. Also, it's just a habit. Whenever you make a habit, whether it's a habit of eating a certain way or a habit of dressing a certain way or speaking a certain way, it does take work to break a habit. It takes self-government, and even the youngest person knows that. This is going to take work. I don't want to do work. I want to just go through life and not have to worry about stuff. Again, that's another social paradigm that is really damaging to families and relationships nowadays, but is very prevalent. Okay, so what would I do in your situation? I would definitely, I wouldn't argue with them by any means, but I would definitely say, if they said, well, no, I'm not going to do this, well, first off, is that what's happening, or are they doing it but begrudgingly and just earning negative consequences along the way?
Both. But I think So I see both of it. Sometimes my 14-year-old saying, I'm not going to do it. She's turning around a little bit because I'm not going out shopping with her anymore. So it's like, okay, we actually wore probably clothes today. But no, look. I think it's turning around a little bit. But especially with the 6-year-old with some of the electronics, it's like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Okay. Gotcha. Oh, so the electronic stuff, like the phones and all that. Well, you own the contract for the phone, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, worst case scenario, all of a sudden there's no contract for the phone. I mean, you know, worst case scenario, but you don't want to necessarily get into a power struggle per se, and that would definitely be a bit on the power struggle lines. It would be much more ideal if they understood the vision of the family and complied. Their understanding of the vision of the family will not be as vivid as the younger ones because it came a little bit later in life, but also because they're living for themselves right now. Their vision of the family would definitely, like as you explain that kind of thing to the family, they would need to see how they benefit from that vision. And those kinds of things they'll start to buy into, and then they'll like the other thing too. Repetition is super important. So whatever your standard is, so if it's no electronics or no, you know, certain kinds of clothing or whatever it happens to be, that you're just consistent about it every single time. And that as they turn in those things to you, possibly there's some sort of a positive consequence that matters to them too. Say, listen, this is the family standard. If you choose to comply, there are benefits to that. You know, maybe if a person chooses to, you know, be okay with everything being pulled out of their closet that does not fit the standard any longer, and they can say okay about it, then maybe they do get a new shopping trip, but this time you're going to go and buy things that are appropriate, right? So that could be worth it to them. Well, great, I want to get some new stuff, and just say, but, you know, it has to cover here, 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 or we don't buy it. But, wow, I get new clothes out of the deal. Or maybe the 16-year-old that's got, you know, that wants to have the cell phones and the different electronics things, I mean, maybe it's one of those things where you say, I'm going to keep this for you, but if you turn it over of your own, if we don't have to take it from you, but you actually turn it over, then there's some sort of a reward for your maturity and understanding and for your respect of us. You know, maybe it's a monetary reward. Maybe it's something that's like he's really wanted to do this certain thing. He's wanted to, you know, whatever, go, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, for my son, it'd be like, I want a gun because he wants to go hunting with, you know, with dad and, you know, or whatever it is, but maybe there's some sort of a trade-off there where it's like, you know, we think that it'd be better for you to put your energy into something like this. So since it's not going to have any service anyway, you might as well turn it over, and then we'd like to offer you, you know, this other thing that you've wanted to do for a hobby instead. And that's not bribery. They need to understand that what you're saying is, should you choose to practice self-government and choose to respect the standard, then there won't need to be us actually taking anything from you. You wouldn't earn any negative consequences for infringing on that family standard on a daily basis, because those are instructions. There wouldn't be any out-of-control behaviors. You need to, you know, there wouldn't be any times where it's like you lose your privileges for 24 hours because you're so upset about the phone or the outfit or whatever it is. And so they need to see the big picture. And the positive is that there might be this other thing, like we get to go shopping for new clothes or something, that is a real big benefit, actually, because there's some cute things out there that we could get. And, you know, and live within your budget, of course, you know, be careful with that with the family. But that's, I would approach it in that kind of a way so that they know, no, you get to choose whether you get to give it of your own free will, or if you choose not to, then we will give you an instruction to give it. And if you choose not to follow the instruction, then this will be the negative consequence. And, you know, whatever it is. And in the end, you are going to request it, and they are going to have to give it. And if they can't give it, they might go out of instructional control, and then they'll lose their privileges for 24 hours. There'll be other things that will happen that it's like, why would they do that to themselves over an outfit? Even they will get that if you explain it. Listen, this is how it's going to happen. So if you choose to do it this way, there's even a reward attached to it that you might think is kind of, or a positive consequence. You probably wouldn't want to call it a reward. A positive consequence that might even matter to you. The other thing is be, like I said, really consistent. So if all of a sudden they're altering clothing to try and, you know, make it not part of your family standard, or they adopt other things that are not part of your family standard, you need to just be very consistent and say, you know, everything in this document is an instruction. And this is something that me and your Father and God or whoever helped make this paper, you know, when me and my husband did it, it was a matter of prayer. What do we really need to do to protect our family? And I'm guessing that in your family you've done the same thing. And so then you say, this isn't a light thing for me. In fact, I've gotten rid of many of my own clothes, my own movies, my own CD collection, and some of those things, because I've realized that I haven't been assertive enough about following a standard either. And then you just say, and I really apologize that I allowed you to buy things, that I even funded things where we bought stuff that in the end does not show your worth. When you wear them, it doesn't show your real value. It cheapens you and could make you attract the wrong kind of guys and the wrong kind of friends and everything else. I would never want that for you, and I apologize. And so now we are fixing it, and we're having these instructions. And then beyond that, they just have to respect it. And if they say, well, that's your standard, and they still give you that, then you just need to say, I understand you have a problem with the standard, and you just do the calm thing. But right now, you need to be calm so that we can talk about it, you know, at length, and so that I can hear what you have to say. It seems to me you're trying to tell me something. You know, it's that same kind of thing. And just don't take it personal at all. I think you have to recognize, and we all do as parents, is there are moments where emotional things happen. And as mothers, you know, from a very young age, when children are babies, we're trained that when a baby cries, when an emotional thing happens, we're supposed to somehow take care of it. But we need to know, and this is something we learn as we get a little bit more mature and as we think things out, is when emotion happens, that does not mean that you have to change anything. It just means that that person has emotion attached to this, and you just stay consistent anyway. And then soon they recognize, oh, well, the emotion's not getting me what I want, so maybe I'll just have to try it. Because that is the manipulation, the emotion. And they are trying to manipulate you by being really vocal about it, emotional about it, bringing other friends into the picture, other families, whatever it is. If you feel like you need to do something for your family, that's your stewardship, and their stewardship is to respect you and to learn. You have to phrase it in a way that's not really dictatorial, but that is their job. That's why God gave them to you. So just take heart that that as long as you're following through with what you need to, and you're doing it with the right tone and the spirit of love and being calm, that even if that 16-year-old hits 18 and is off to college, and she still didn't show like she really loved the family standard, don't worry. She will remember your consistency. She will remember how much you cared about the family. And one day, well, I can't remember if it's a she or a he, but one day there will be children that they'll be raising, and they'll go, you know what, we've got to have a rule about what the standards are here. And it will come back to them, even if you don't see the change. Know that they're learning and that their hearts are being transformed every time you're consistent and calm. Does that help, or do I need to be more specific about a particular thing?
No, I think it really helps. I think I love what you said in the last, that even if they go off one day to know that the family standard was there. And I had visions about the 6-year-old, especially. It's a boy. But he's been having trouble with gaming as well. And but I had this vision of him as a father, and I suddenly realized, yeah, that's worth it all. I mean, even if it's hard now, and even if he yells now, and even if it's hard for him, if I let this go on, this gaming, it's going to destroy him. And
right.
and that vision won't happen. And so it's like, it's worth it. It's really, that is worth it.
Yeah, so. And you know, the gaming thing, I mean, with the computer, you know, you just password protect everything. He may be bugged by it, but there is not an age that is too old to have password protection. My husband, for many years in my family, in order to keep everyone safe in the family, he said, Nicolene, I want you to be the only one that knows the password to all the computers. I don't want any of us on there all the time. And you're the best one because none of that stuff is alluring to you at all. And so, I mean, there was a time, it's no longer this way, you know, for him, he has too much business work and stuff to do on the computer. But there was a time when he even was that proactive about keeping the family safe, where he was like, hey, you know what? I just want you to have the password and that's it. I don't even want to know it because I'm too lazy. If the kids ask me for it, I might just tell it to them. And I don't want it to, because I won't want to go type it in. He's like, so just you know it. And then that way, if you're not here, nobody gets to use a computer. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool that he recognized that, you know, within himself, that that even he might just kind of blow it and, you know, let the kids on too long because he doesn't pay attention to that kind of stuff in detail like I do. And so...
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues we're having, though, with my husband, who feels like it should be more of his choice and more of an experience, and the feeling that if he continues on, that he will find a time himself when he says, this gaming isn't good for me. Mm. That is my husband had that experience. At one point, he decided, okay, this is really not good for me. But mm-hmm. So that's a conflict that we have as husband and wife as
there,
well, which is quite...
Yeah, there is a difference between... my husband was the same, and that's one of the reasons... You know, early on when we got married, he said, we will never have one of those gaming stations. We will never have any of that. He said, because I will use it too much. And I said, oh, okay, that's good to know. So he made me promise. He's like, even if I ask you for one, you always tell me no. And I was like, okay, I'll remember that. And he said, because, Nicolene, I was one of those kids that would go to school and my mother would send me money for lunch or for milk or whatever, and I would save it and not eat my lunch, and I would go to the arcade after school. And sometimes I would save up days and days of lunch money so that I could go to the arcade and stay there for a really long time. And he said, because I really love that. Now, that is different than what we have now, though. See, the arcade... My husband was addicted to the arcade, and I'm guessing your husband was maybe, it was the same level, you know, like arcade times or something. But even with the arcade, it was bad, but it was like you had to go there, and you had to spend money each time you went there. So you still had to make more of a choice, where our kids nowadays, it's just there. It's just there online. Not only that, and so there's hardly any, there's no sacrifice, actually. It's just there. And then the other thing is that it's so vivid that it becomes a reality for them. And that then they get an anxiety feeling about finishing a game. And they can't connect with other people. Now, you're right, he could recognize that all on his own. He could get to a point where he gets that completely. And who knows, you know, with your husband, you guys are going to have to work this out together so that you don't have a double standard and you don't end up villainizing each other in front of the children. But honestly, that can be very hard to do. And why would you want someone to hit bottom, you know, on something like that if they didn't need to get to that point? And so that's a big one. And if at all possible, I think you need to bring up the word of freedom. Your son is not free. He is bound. He is tied to those games. They control him on the inside in ways that make him anxious, probably agitated. When he spends enough time disconnecting from the family, it ruins his family relationships because he can't connect with the family like he should. Again, I'm just guessing here. I don't know him, but I know this is what happens. And so it damages all kinds of things like that. You can just try to wait stuff out, but that doesn't always work. And there are different levels of addiction. So if he has an addiction to gaming right now, it's really easy to get into more gaming and more, you know, more hardcore gaming and all that kind of stuff. And soon he will, I mean, it even leads to things like porn. I mean, it's been proven. And that ruins relationships. But there are girls nowadays, they're onto it. And they're like, and these are the good ones, and they're like, before they'll even date a guy, they'll ask questions. My brother recently got remarried, and the gal he really was hoping to date, she'd never been married before, and he tried to get this guy to introduce him to her, and because it was her brother-in-law or something like that, and he said, okay, well, I'll ask her if she'll want to go out with you, but just be prepared, you're going to have to answer a questionnaire. My brother was like, what? He's like, oh, yeah, it's really common now, but especially my sister's really into that. She's not going to waste her time. And you know what the questionnaire was full of? Gaming, technological questions, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. That there was no way she was going to even begin a relationship with somebody who loved to do gaming. And so your son is going to be up against that. He won't find the right kind of gal if he has an addiction to anything, whatever it is. He won't be able to find that girl that's supposed to be, you know, his wife and the right mother of his children and have a successful marriage. And anyway, my sister-in-law got that, and so my brother had to fill out a packet of papers, turn it in to her brother. And then she reviewed it and then decided that she would date him. Now, I'll tell you what, that's pretty intense, but I also realized in today's day and age, I'm going to be advising my girls to do the same thing. That if there's a guy that wants to date them, there needs to be at least one piece of paper where there's some questions, where she says, I'd love to date you. You seem like a wonderful guy. However, I have really high standards, and I want you to know that, because whoever I date needs to respect them. I also want to make sure that you would be a good fit for me. So, here, fill out this paper. And that she wouldn't waste any time. And that that guy, even if he did have a problem, would be like, whoa, I want this kind of girl enough that even if I've got, I'm getting rid of my problem right now, and I'm going to mark on this paper, I don't have a problem anymore, and that's it, it's done. You know, there is an amazing thing. So, the word is freedom. He's bound. And that his future freedom somewhat depends upon what he does right now to reclaim his freedom. And that's the part that he needs to understand. Every 16-year-old wants to be free. They want to have their whole life to themselves, to do whatever they want with. Well, he doesn't have that with the gaming. It takes away his freedom. He may see gaming as being free because he gets to jump into another world for a little while. But doing it for long periods of time is definitely not free. It has a hold on you, and it stops you from living. It stops you from being able to have any useful purpose in life. And so that's what you have to help him see. You have to tell him, Jake, or whatever his name is, I want you to have freedom. I want you to be completely free, to succeed, to become the great guy that you're supposed to be. And I know that gaming takes away your freedom because it sucks you in and you don't even realize how much time's gone by. and you're worried about getting on the next time, and you think about it when you're not on, you're not free. It has a hold on you. I want you to have a free life, so we're going to just stop, you know, at our house. Anyway, that's what I would do. I would phrase it to him in that way so that he understands the whole point of you having this standard is to advocate for him. It's not just because it bugs you. No parent is that short-sighted usually, hopefully. They recognize it's only a problem because it hurts my child. In the long run, it hurts my child. The other thing, I don't know if you're a religious person, but after you make that, you show him, you discuss and analyze how it is that it is affecting his freedom and what you want for him. Pray together, you and him, or you and him and your husband. Pray together to ask God to help him be able to overcome that craving and to make a clean break so that he can be free. Show him how serious it is that you want that freedom for him. Now, at the end of the day, he could go off to college in a couple of years or wherever and not care about the whole experience that happened. I had tears in my eyes when you said that you got this visual of him as an adult, because that's the whole point. That's the whole thing we're doing, is we're not raising perfect kids, and it is going to be hard. Over and over again, it's going to be hard. But once they hit adulthood, if we have exposed them to enough principles and been consistent enough and been their advocate enough, they will not be able to deny the truth of what we have told them. They won't. And then they will live it. But then it will be their idea and they still might not credit you for it. But that's okay. So long as they turn out free and good. Is there anything else that I can answer for you?
No, I think this is it. I think this has been incredibly helpful because it's something I've known and it's something we've been working on, and it's started to slip a little bit again, and I just needed to hear this because all of these things I've known, but they're not known much around us. Actually, even I'm Mormon, I'm LDS, but even then, it's an environment that even most kids at church game, most of the boys that he knows at church game as well, significantly. And so it's a very lonely place for him. Even now, when we've limited a lot of his gaming, it's a very lonely place because there's hardly any boys that he knows. I cannot think of one boy that doesn't game.
Yeah, so, you know, my son is the same. In our church, it's the same. All the boys spend some time gaming, and that's what they discuss when they're together.
Yeah.
And my son luckily understands the concept behind it. I love that my husband shared with him, you know, hey, listen, and he shared this with all of the kids in the family. There is a reason that we don't have gaming stations, that we don't do online gaming, all that kind of stuff. And I mean, the main reason is because I know it's addictive because I used to be addicted. And I don't want that for any of you, you know, and this is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other thing so many people don't understand is that when a person overcomes something like an addiction to, in this case, gaming, they have increased power and increased purpose. So even though my husband spent years of his life hanging out at an arcade, because he chose to take a stand against it because he wanted to be a certain kind of a father, he now has a power to influence the lives of other people by just telling them simply, it is addicting, I know, because I was addicted. And I had to break free of it, and it was hard. So don't ever start. You know, so maybe, you know, maybe your husband has similar stories too, but
mm-hmm.
Let your son know that he has power within him. It's hard to be the odd man out. Our family's been the odd man out on many, many different occasions. When you choose to homeschool, it's amazing what kinds of things people will say to you and to your children. But anyway, and also when you choose to do foster care, it's just incredible. But being the odd man out has its virtues. It has its positives. And so remember that. As you see him struggle, empower him. As you see him struggle, empower him over and over again. Because the person, the people in our society who know how to stand apart and be something different than everybody else are always the ones that lead society and the world and people to greatness. They become the Gandhis. They become the Thomas Jeffersons. They become the church leaders. Those are the people who strengthen the world. I just spent some time this last weekend with a guy named Nathan Jurowitz. He was a homeschool kid who had social problems. He was bullied at school. He was a little bit smaller than the other kids, kind of geeky. He didn't get a lot of respect. Family decided to homeschool him, which made him even more different. But he was happy about it because he wasn't all of a sudden with all these kids anymore. He still was a bit shy and had some social problems and even went on to say, you know, my parents have social problems. I mean, I'm really good compared to them, and I've had to work at it really hard. And he explained how he worked on those social problems that he had and knowing how to be social. Anyway, as I sat there with this guy and I heard his story of his life and what his life was like and how alone and apart he has always been from everybody else, I was in awe. This multimillionaire guy who understands marketing, investing, entrepreneurialism, and he's just a young guy and he's teaching all these people around the world all of this stuff. And I looked at him and I thought, he's freeing people. He has programs to teach kids about how to be entrepreneurs. He is freeing people. And I'm going to actually have him on as a guest sometime. So just look forward to that. Because he has funny hair. That's how he gets his attention, so that he doesn't look geeky or whatever. He's got funny hair, which would go against your family standard. But the guy is a religious, wonderful man who in any regular circle would be considered just any run-of-the-mill whatever guy not going anywhere. But you see what he's done with his life and you realize, wow, this guy is different. And the reason he is different, and he even says, the reason I'm different and the reason I've done this is partially because I'm homeschooled. I was homeschooled. But what he means by that is because I learned how to stand alone. I'm not saying everybody has to homeschool their kids, but I am saying that there is benefits to being able to stand alone. And, you know, if that's a moral stand, then so be it. That's the battle we're in nowadays anyway. We are in world war, and the world war is about what the morals are going to be and the standards that people are going to hold. And so either they pick a side and take a stand and have power and influence and go far and make a positive change in the world, or they do what everybody else is doing and they stay part of mediocrity and they lose their potential to become leaders because they refuse to learn the lessons that God can teach them by being something special, something different. It's hard to teach that to children, but they can learn it, and I know they can because my children have learned it, and so I know that other kids can learn it too, no matter their age. There is a great article that your two older children should read. I'm sure you've heard me mention it before, but it's called The Myth of the Teenager. And it's by Dr. Michael Platt, P-L-A-T-T. If you type in online, if you just Google The Myth of the Teenager Platt, it'll pop up. That is an article all young people should read and their parents should read. My children, and discuss. My children and their friends read it. I led a discussion on that, and then I ended up writing a book, and the book was called I'm Not a Teenager and Here's Why. Another book that your son should definitely read, or you should read with the family or whatever, is Do Hard Things by Brett and Alex Harris. They're twins. Those things are all about having purpose in life, and I think he needs a vision of what he actually is able to accomplish. He might have already bought into a lot of ideas presented for the mediocrity to keep them mediocre. And in order to see himself as something different, he might need a little bit of inspiration, and then he'd be able to embrace his difference as a kind of power that he has that nobody else has. And that goes for all kinds of differences, moral differences, whatever, physical differences, all kinds of things. So hopefully that helps. You're doing a great thing. Just focusing on trying to train your children to be leaders and teach them leadership principles and tackling some of these hard issues when they're at difficult ages because they've already been on a road, on a path for a while. And anyway, that is a great thing that you're doing for them to help free them. And if you can visualize yourself as their liberator, as their person who is going to help them learn what they need to know to be free, then you'll be able to maintain the courage. And it sounds like you've already got that focus of where they're going, that it's about what kind of an adult they're going to be and what they're going to do for the world. And so it doesn't really matter if there's a moment of pain here and there for somebody in the family, because the end goal is worth it. Does anybody else have any questions while we're on the call? Or is there anybody else who's on the call who is saying, you know what, I've got a question and I've got to be on the call next week? Okay, maybe not. Maybe we've lost some of you. It did go a little bit over. I hope it was useful today. I hope that all of you were able to get something out of the call that you can apply to your families, that you can teach. I appreciate everyone on the call who shares a lot of personal things about their families and were able to talk about how to help, you know, people through things, what principles to focus on. This is a great work that we're all undertaking, the work of parenting children in this generation where things are very difficult and where it's almost preached on every TV show and every radio program that we all need to be more selfish and more selfish. And everyone here in this program is attempting to do something different than that and to bring their family back to true principles. And that is something to be admired. And you need to keep heart that it'll happen. The children will learn the principles. It may not be in the time frame that you wished it will happen, especially depending on what age they started, but they will learn them, and they will still look to you as an example as you teach them what the truth is and help inspire them to achieve their true potential in God's eyes. So I hope that everyone has a wonderful Friday, a wonderful weekend. I will plan on talking with all of you tomorrow. Next week. Whew, not tomorrow. I've got things to do. And so we'll talk to you then. And if anyone on the call would like to be mentored on next week's call or another time, let me know. Or if you have questions, be sure to send them to me so that we can address them. Thanks. Bye.